previously.tv podcast network.
I know what you did, and I am sick of your attitude.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 12, Friends in Deed. That is a real estate-related pun joke. Here are your hosts, Tara and Sarah. Stay off the west side.
I don't think it actually is, because that would make sense.
No.
Well, let's get on with it. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
I sometimes think that we should put the big episodes out on Thursday because we're so bumped out on Mondays to, like, I mean, we're not recording this on a Monday, but for this to be how people start their week, I mean, I hope you don't think that we don't enjoy being with you, dear listeners. We do. But God, the show is getting bad in its aged age.
God, it's so terrible.
Well, let's get into it. Starting with our C plot, Steve and Carly, whatever. I don't even care to come up with some kind of encapsulation of what happens here. It is so stupid. Steve and Carly are on their way out the door for a date when Carly goes over Zach's homework. And since it involves him drawing a picture of the house and everyone who lives in it, Sarah, did you assume they were heading somewhere where it's like, why isn't Steve in your picture? Or why is Steve in your picture? Or something about Steve?
Yeah.
Nothing of that sort happens. Why did we have to see it? But then Carly kisses Zach and he's burning up. And I would think that the babysitter, who is Carly's own mother, can probably handle a kid with a fever, which happens all the time when you're a kid. But Steve is very understanding. Clip two.
I'll order in some Thai food, okay?
That'd be great.
There goes my sex life.
Well, yeah.
Really?
Thai food, probably not going to help. Going to be some poots.
It's the Indian food of Thailand. Callback. I don't know why we need to hear Steve's inner monologue. This is a peep show. It is stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I even noticed the first time that was his inner monologue. This is how close attention I was paying to this plot, i.e. little.
Plus, she's 4 feet away from him on TV. She definitely wouldn't hear him even if he said it out loud. But anyway, the next day, Steve has snuck Carly over to his place for a nooner when Val comes in. Oh, no, it's time for the exterminator. No fucking today. Not sure why they wouldn't have started at Carly's place when it's apparently a weekday and Zach would be in school. But when we see them next, they have figured that out. Except when they open the door to Carly's house, Carly's mom is there on the couch making out with some dude whose name is Chet Winslow. Amazing soap opera name, by the way.
I know. Of the Landfair Winslows. All right.
Their pretext for being there is to watch a Preston Sturges movie on Carly's TV because her mom's cable went out. Introductions are pleasant until Carly's mom says that Chet has invited her to go to his house in Arizona for a few months, which is really going to fuck Carly on childcare. We're supposed to believe that her mom would do this given that, and do it on a week's notice without having even told Carly she was dating this guy at all. Not plausible, but whatever. And in the next scene, Carly is tidying and stressing about what she's going to do after her mother has fucked off. And Steve says they'll figure out a solution. And she's surprised and happy to hear him call them a we. And finally, they may fuck. Ta-da! On to the B plot. Brandon and Kelly have very little to do with each other. So Brandon starts off worse than usual. Clip three.
Hey, Kel, come on. Chop, chop. We're going to be late.
Fuck you. How about that?
Yeah. How about I chop chop your dick off?
Kelly is engrossed in her reading and recommends that Brandon get some young whiz kid named Emma Bennett to write something for the beat. And then we see Kelly at her job. She's very gratified by her work at the Foundations Clinic, where it's busy as hell all the time. Yet somehow she and Dr. Monahan can find time to stand around discussing how great they both are for a while. Kelly also finds time to brag about how great Dr. Monahan is when she is at home to a definitely not jealous Brandon. By the way, this guy is married. Brandon gives Kelly credit for suggesting that he meet this Emma Bennett, which is happening that day. Get what's happening with these two and their new opposite sex friends? cough. So Emma Bennett looks like Irene Malloy from Grosse Pointe with a strawberry blonde bob. It's very Velma Kelly. And this was a year after the Chicago revival on Broadway. So that scans. She can tell by looking at him that Brandon is a square who will be annoyed by her smoking in the office. Curious to know if this monologue reflects the views of my co-host, Clip 4.
It's a nasty habit. Lousy for the lungs. But you know, in a twisted way, that's part of the allure. You know that little thrill you get when you know you're doing something bad?
Freud would have a field day with you, wouldn't he?
He certainly would.
Not a thing.
You said it in your outro last week. She is such a tryhard from like second one. She is exhausting.
And in a particularly 90s way, mm-hmm. like just the, everything about her. I mean, we'll get into it, but oof, it's tough. And it's weird. Like I didn't realize, because I kind of fell away from the show at some point. Mm-hmm. I didn't remember why it wasn't because it was bad, because it had been bad for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was her.
Yeah.
Because I really think they were trying to make this actor happen, mm-hmm. and it didn't. I mean, she worked, but ugh.
Yeah.
I just didn't understand. Like, she was super annoying. And then on top of that, she's like going to all these lengths to seduce Brandon.
I know.
Walsh. And now.
So improbably, Brandon is offering Emma a job at the Beat when A, she would probably be making more money freelancing, and B, maybe he should just have her write something freelance before committing their not budget to a full-time staff writer. But he's starting to say he wouldn't stop her freelancing for other outfits before she's turning him down. Clip 5.
No, no commitments. It's nothing personal. It's just that monogamy cramps my style. I like to freelance. Lets me be my own boss.
Okay. There's a line in 30 Rock where Liz says that she's an independent contractor, which is basically like a modern day pirate. And like, this is one step less ridiculous than that. Anyway, that's when Brandon suggests.
Not even a whole step, like a half step.
Right.
Ugh.
So that's when Brandon suggests that she write a freelance piece. This is like, he doesn't give her an assignment. He's just like, write a thing. And she says this, Clip 6.
You cut right to the chase. No foreplay, nothing. I like that.
Is that a yes?
Why not? You seem to understand just what I need.
I wish I could say that the like cliche of the oversexed female journalist who like fucks everyone around her had died, but it hasn't. It's still a thing, except now usually it's like they fuck their interview subjects, but gross and no and stop.
Well, I don't know who this was supposed to be modeled on. And, mm-hmm. you know, leaving aside the fact that it's Brandon, like, yeah. We just did Mark and I just did an episode on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, ranking all the songs on Madonna's second greatest hits album.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a bunch from the Erotica album that mm-hmm. are just that she's like, I like to like the song is just like, I like to fuck. Have I mentioned how much I like to fuck? Here's the kinds of fucking I like to do. And you're just like, oh, my God, are you a freshman home for Thanksgiving break?
Yeah.
No one cares that you pierced your clit. We're trying to talk about the weather. Fuck off. That's Emma.
But in addition to which, like, this is a professional meeting with an editor you have never met before. Like, even if you decided, I mean, it would have been different if we'd seen her, like, with her roommate being like, I'm going to go fuck with this guy. I can't believe he thinks I would write for his shit pile. And then that's why she's being like this. But, like, we don't get any indication that that's what's happening.
No.
She's just this weirdo who's trying to fuck him so hard.
She's just Cruella Dullesville, and it's like, okay, you know.
Nice.
I mean, she's very pretty, and it's not the actor's fault, but oh, God.
Mm.
So annoying, and I really do think that I couldn't take it, and like he, whatever, was lured into her, spoiler, I guess, not that anyone cares anymore, web, and it's like, are we supposed to feel sorry for anyone involved? Because I hate Kelly, and this looks good on her, so go ahead.
Seriously.
But at the same time, pretend it just happened off screen because I hate both of the people doing it as well.
Seriously. So night falls on the clinic and Dr. Monahan and Kelly are left alone. And what do you know? She has a sore shoulder from filling out insurance forms. He offers to take a look and his exam has Kelly tensing up even before he pulls down her cardigan sleeve and camisole strap. More like Dr. Monahansy.
Nice.
Thank you. So after a shower, Kelly tries to tell Brandon about an exam that made her feel uncomfortable, and he is very understanding and empathetic. JK, clip 7.
I'm telling you, Brandon, it was unprofessional.
Kelly, you guys worked together. He was probably just being extra careful.
I don't know. It's just...
What?
It felt different. I mean, there's touching, and then there's touching, you know?
Don't you think if you really stepped over that line, you'd be sure?
All I know is that it didn't feel right.
You're not used to being examined by someone you know. It makes sense it would make you feel a little uncomfortable.
Why are you taking his side?
I'm not taking his side. I'm just saying, you've said so many great things about him. I'm having a hard time imagining someone so good being so bad.
So what? You're saying that I made this up?
No.
Then what are you saying?
I'm saying maybe you just got the wrong impression. I mean, you didn't call him on it, did you?
No.
Exactly. If he'd have been out of line, you would have said something. Not like you to just sit there and be made to feel uncomfortable, right?
Rape culture!
Oh, God. This is like this is fucking clinic in everything that we have been screaming about for, I don't know, decades?
Yeah.
Like, also, the faces he's making are...
Thank you.
Intolerable, and they I do not tolerate them.
So punchable. They're at least one of them is in the visual aids because I made a GIF. But he is being so condescending. He is not trying to hear her at all. And when she's like, "Why are you taking his side?" I'm not. You are 100%. You are this guy you've never met because he's a man. You're saying he probably didn't do anything wrong, and Kelly's just it's just a misunderstanding.
Yeah, don't obey your instincts and. Don't. And it's like, well, you didn't call him on it, so that's on you. And even worse, this is all happening in the context of him really not caring at all about the conversation and wanting it to end so he can go back to hitting the escape key on his laptop or whatever the fuck work he's supposedly doing in bed, douche.
And yet somehow this is convincing to Kelly because rape culture exists for a reason. And instead of floating to another job, she's back at the clinic the next day, avoiding Dr. Hansy enough for him to comment on it when he comes to get her to be present while he gives an exam, which I feel the job of a medical professional, but whatever. Dr. Monahan says Kelly improbably has to be there because people are so litigious these days and it's a sad world when you can't even practice medicine without a witness room in the room. Wah, wah. Kelly looks tense. Crosstown, Emma has put on her shortest skirt to go to the beat office, sit on the edge of Brandon's desk and claim that her computer freaked out and ate her article, so she needs a day's extension on her deadline. Nightmare. Don't get into business with this person. This is a bad way to start your relationship as editor and freelancer. Just saying. But Brandon agrees.
And then she's like, and then I'll and then we can meet for a drink and I'll give it to you in person. Like, what, you're gonna dictate it to him over a glass of cranberry juice? I mean red wine.
She suggests meeting for drinks at 1, the normal time we all go for drinks. And
my notes literally read, even I would not do that. And I'll drink anytime. As you may have read in the men's room.
And then this, clip 8.
Well, I would really love to stay and schmooze, but I'm late for lunch.
Seems like you always got somewhere to go.
Well, you know what they say.
No, what do they say?
A body in motion stays in motion. See ya.
She's so unprofessional.
And it's just so, I mean, forget unprofessional. It's like not even alluring.
No, it's not sexy.
I just don't know. It's just trying really hard. Although, what, I don't know. We're not straight men and we're also not Brandon. So maybe we don't know.
No, it's true. So when Kelly and Brandon are back together, she asks if Emma is as funny as she seems in her columns, and he says yes without mentioning how tiresomely flirty she is. And when Kelly suggests having her over for dinner, he thinks it's a great idea. And in response, Kelly says she thinks she overreacted about Dr. Monahan, and I don't think Brandon hears anything after she says he was right, frankly.
No. Or possibly even before that.
True. At drinks on the 3rd Street Promenade, which we are going to be seeing a ton of this season, apparently, Emma hands over her article and then asks him to tell her about the real Brandon Walsh. He says, "What you see is what you get," which is unfortunately true. She asks, "Why the beat?" And he asks, "What about a body in motion?" But she says, "Sometimes a body likes where it is." And he leans in to give her sex eyes instead of, I don't know, going back to work and editing her late copy. Anyway, then when Kelly had decided she made up Dr. Monahan's creepiness, he bumps into her in the hall at the clinic and tells her she looks very beautiful. And back in the bedroom of no sex, Brandon claims he didn't invite Emma to dinner because it didn't come up. And Kelly is taking another after work shower because she feels dirty. Get it? He wants to either ask or tell her something, but she says she's fine. And while Kelly is out of the room, the phone rings. Clip 9.
Yeah.
Hi, Brandon.
It's Emma. Is it too late? Are you in bed?
No, it's not too late. Yes, I am in bed. If you're calling about your article, don't worry. I printed it word for word. It was great.
It wasn't too cerebral?
No, not at all. It's great.
One more thing.
What are you wearing?
Excuse me?
I'm wearing a black slip with lace trim.
Charming.
Actually, it's pretty sexy.
I'm sure it is.
Do you want to come over and find out?
I can't.
You will.
Who was on the phone?
That was a wrong number.
The soundtrack cares so much more than anyone else.
I also don't understand why, like, this always is a thing on TV. Oh, it was a wrong number. Like, she heard you talking.
Yeah.
You did not say, "There's no one by that name here," and then hang up. Just be like, yeah, it was Emma and she was being weirdly flirty. I don't think I'm going to work with her anymore. Except you want a boner. So, I mean, whatever. Ugh. Like, be better at bad lying, TV. That's my thing. I'm not a crackpot.
No, you're not. On to the A-plot. The after dark taints everyone it touches. Donna is making breakfast for Noah, and they're about to kiss when Felice, the cooler Martin, walks through the wide open front door, immediately bitching passive aggressively that Donna has been dodging her calls and skipping pleasantries in clip 10.
You know, we have plenty of food. Would you like to join us?
No, thank you.
God bless that
delivery.
Go ahead,
I have something to say after this clip when you're done.
So good. No, God, no. Also, they really do have plenty. Like, as usual, the props department has supplied 17 times the amount of food for the number of people that are planning to prepare and eat it.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't need an entire bushel of mushrooms to make two omelets that you're probably not going to eat anyway because it's foreplay. So, yeah. Go ahead.
But all I wanted to say was that you put this clip in the doc. You have that first "no" in all caps. And when I cut the clip, the waveform of it, like, it's just this bolus of a "no" in the middle of it. It just looked really
Yeah. I mean, she really is like, "Oh, God, no." Because would you want to eat something Donna cooked?
No.
Does she even know how to turn the burner on?
No, but she would probably sweat her self-tanner all in it. Like, no, thank you. Anyway.
True.
Felice then bosses Noah about getting the boat ready for auction, which he already did. They really have, like, soft-soaped the fact that he's been living on the Martin's boat this whole time. Like, I guess that was established at some point, but it really has never come up whose boat it was. But anyway.
Yeah, or it came up in, like, the first episode, and then it's like, I guess you sort of assumed that was, you know, canceled because Kelly got shot, but no.
Right. Anyway. He already did it, and then it's Donna's turn to be pissed that she had to hear about the auction from Noah instead of Felice, which Felice was putting off because she knew it would upset Donna. Felice was hoping that Donna would bring David to the auction, and Donna doesn't bother telling her he's dead to her. Felice then gets a convenient headache so that Donna can direct her to the medicine cabinet, and also while she's gone doing that, Donna and Noah discuss where he's going to live now, and he still doesn't know. She teases that if she thought he was poor, she would take care of him, and then opens her mouth way too wide to kiss him, which I don't regret to tell you is in the visual aids as a gif because I made it. But Felice walks in on this before calling Donna away to ask her what is up with David, who is suddenly the greatest thing that ever happened to Donna now that Noah is the alternative. Clip 11.
Please, sweetheart, tell me you're not spending time with this wharf rat.
He's not who you think he is.
Oh, I know exactly who he is.
No, you're completely jumping to conclusions, judging him without even knowing him the same way you did with David.
Oh, no, at least David didn't work on a boat.
I can't believe how superficial you are.
All right, call it whatever you want to call it. But, sweetheart, it's becoming real clear that you're not making very smart choices.
Mom, please, don't tell me how to run my life.
I'm just...
No. I'm an adult now, and you can't just walk in here and take over my life. It doesn't work anymore.
You're on an allowance. It'll work however Felice and Dr. John want it to work, you dumb baby.
Also, what's so wrong about working on a boat? Like, maybe the reason David doesn't work on a boat is he has no skills.
Yeah. Also, you dated Ray, and that did not go well with Felice. Like, you really can't believe how superficial she is. Just tell him he's a hunt. Just tell her he's a hunter so she'll get off your back.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Val decides to stop hating Noah long enough to mooch around for a job managing the Peach Pit after dark. It does not go great. Clip 12.
I haven't decided what I'm going to do with it yet.
Tell me you're not planning on running it yourself.
And what if I was?
Why would you want to run a club? I mean, if I had your money, I wouldn't.
Maybe I'd enjoy it.
David couldn't do it alone, so what makes you think you can, huh?
Look, I'm not completely incompetent, okay? Besides, can't be all that bad if you want
to
do it.
The club's important to me. It's not just some phase that I'm going through. I care what happens to it.
Well, you have no idea what's important to me, okay?
I know what I see. It's not some big work ethic.
Hey, look, I am not lazy.
You're an outdoor person. I mean, that means you're going to be inside working at least 15 hours.
See, I'm starting to think this isn't about the club at all, is it?
This is not about us, Noah. You can go out with Donna all you want. I really don't care. But I care about the club. A lot.
You just don't think I can run it by myself, right?
It's more like I know I can.
I already made a decision. End of story.
Okay, the beginning of that clip was he hadn't decided what he was going to do with it yet, so she talked him into doing it, I guess?
Yeah, like, if you actually want the job, maybe a little sugarcoating on it?
Yeah.
Also, since when do you know you can run the club? You sucked at it so badly you had to take on shitty David as a partner.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of David, he needs a new job because he's not even working on a boat, Felice. And decides the place to look is the classifieds in this brand new shitty free paper his friends run. He thinks he can get a job decorating cupcakes. I don't. Again, he has no skills. I would not trust him to decorate anything. Personally.
No. Also, cupcakes are important. You know, giant shirt is going to be flapping into the frosting constantly. Like, no.
Steve jocularly expresses the view that David should kiss up to Noah to get his Peach Pit After Dark job back, but David is too proud, and Brandon joins Steve until David says that Noah is dating Donna, and then they both back off because bro code. And then David is loitering around the Peach Pit, a business attached to the one he just fucked up and quit Nip Fit a Peak, you know, like you would. Let's hear this. Clip 13.
Got any leads?
Yeah, starting tomorrow, I'll be working at Khaki Nation.
Well, at least you'd be well-dressed.
Shade!
Nat. What he does not say, but should, is maybe with a regular paycheck, you can actually pay for some of these mega burgers.
Honestly.
Asshat.
So Noah comes out to say that David put a lot of work into the club and deserves to have it. A, he didn't. That's been his whole storyline this season. B, B, he in no way deserves anything except 10 more beatings from Tiny, but Noah says the peach pit after dark is all his, no strings attached. And David refuses because pride, and asks if Donna talked Noah into it. Noah says she doesn't know that he's there. David doesn't want the club. He won't even take any money for the assets that are still in the building. Clip 14.
Don't do me any more favors, all right? You got my girl. You got the club. Congratulations. Thanks to you, my life's ruined.
Good job, Noah.
Okay, so Khaki Nation is actually the Urban Outfitters at the Third Street Promenade.
It totally is. I still have a bracelet that we bought there together.
Uh-huh. Oh boy, memories. And David is a bad employee immediately, which his manager Melissa can smell on him. Clip 15.
Didn't you read your Khaki Nation manual?
Someone please generate this document. Is it objet de fanfic? Because I would really like to see
amazing.
It.
Yes.
I think it's just one page that just says, don't be David, in like 128 point font. Mission accomp.
And mixing textures is not allowed. Like, that's very weird merchandising. Whatever.
Yeah.
David is frustrated by the rules he did not read in his employee manual and visibly doesn't care about this job. And apparently under-ordering wine is an endemic problem for male Peach Pit After Dark managers because when Val shows up to needle Noah and orders a glass, there is none. And after a little more sniping from her and defensiveness from him, she leaves. And when Donna comes home, David is lying on the couch reading a magazine with the music up way too loud and being a dick. She knows that Noah tried to give David his Peach Pit After Dark job back, so if he's unhappy not having it, he has no one to blame but himself. Say more things like that, Donna, except also say, get the fuck out.
Yeah. While changing the locks.
Mm-hmm. And at the Walsh house, Noah finds Val to tell her that she's right. He's in over his head, has no idea how to run the club, and needs her help. They negotiate and blah, blah. She agrees to come back. And then David is back at Khaki Nation being bad at his job some more. When his manager, Melissa, leaves him alone to fold, he does it for 1 second before asking a customer listening to a Sony Sports Walkman. If it's the new Frosted Flakes, and the kid gives him his headphones. And of course, his manager catches him 1 second after that and sends him to the back to unpack boxes. But David is too good for any manager and quits on the spot like the entitled dickweed he is. Melissa, you are better off. Hire the kid with the Walkman instead.
Seriously.
So then Donna comes home to find David sitting uselessly in a chair, eating a sandwich of ingredients he did not buy. He smugly tells her he's going to find a job that doesn't involve folding clothes or a company policy. Pretty sure all companies have policies, but good luck. And Donna and her insane hair look disgusted. But before she can say anything, before she can, he says he knows he has no one to blame but himself. And she is sorry she said that, but also clip 16.
You want to know what's really bothering me?
Please, make my day.
I've been thinking that maybe it was a mistake that we slept together.
You know what? I don't want to hear this.
I thought we were going to get married. And look, we're not even together anymore.
Donna. That was your decision. I was fine waiting. Hell, I'd already waited 7 years.
I'm not saying that it wasn't my decision.
This doesn't even sound like you. You know, I'm listening to what you're saying, but I'm not sure if these words are yours or your mother's.
They're mine.
Are you sure?
You know what? Forget it. I thought that I could talk to you about this, that you could listen to me, that maybe you could be my friend.
You know what? I'm sorry. I want more than that. I still love you. That's why I can't help you out with this whole thing, all right? Because it hurts me too much.
Sorry.
Clearly.
So am I.
Ugh.
No, you're not. You fucking stole money from her. Why do you think you're in this predicament? It's not her. It's you.
And for the 500th time, you did not wait 7 years. You slept with a minimum of 4 other people before you had sex with Donna. So fuck off.
Yeah. Oh my God, Brian Austin Green is so fucking terrible in this part. So bad.
He does this move too where he makes this, like, he sets his jaw in this bitter way, and I'm so glad that I caught it, which you can see in the visual aids, because he looks like Jay Leno. Like, I don't know how he is physically doing it, but his whole head shape changes, and it's It's not flattering. Yeah, he actually looks more like Popeye than Jay Leno. Anyway, go to the visual aids at previously.tv. Tell me I'm wrong. You will not be able to. Noah and Val then have a planning meeting where he is surprised to see her offering up good ideas about a job that she cares about, and she's grateful for the chance, and he's glad she's happy, maybe because he doesn't know that she's lying in wait for the chance to throw this new job slash association with Noah in Donna's face. Donna tries to pretend that she's not bothered and fails and goes straight to Noah to yell at him about it. And his response is that asking your ex-boyfriend to move in with you is as personal as working with an ex-girlfriend. She's not prepared to get into another relationship in which Val is up her ass all the time, but Noah isn't sure if this is about Val or about Felice's disapproval. And Donna has a lot of thinking to do, cue smell of wood burning, and will call him when she's figured things out. David's next job is at a car wash, and honestly, I don't know how he even got that. He's telling Val about it on the promenade when Donna catches up to them and then gets all tense that David is with Val and then leaves in a hurry, which why even stop him to say hi at all? Pointedly says goodbye to David only. By the way, David's giant outfit is so giant, his pants are like flapping so in the wind.
If he had walked over a vent, they would have filled with air and he would have sailed into the Pacific. It's amazing.
They both think it's hilarious how mad Donna was and are right. But Val thinks it will solve all their problems if they make Donna and Noah think they are dating again. So that Donna and Noah get so jealous, they break up and then reunite with David and Val. And David decides it's worth a shot. I don't know. I guess he's bored. So then Donna shows up alone to the fucking boat auction. Felice congratulates Donna on growing up and agrees with what she said the other day about Felice trying to interfere in her life. And the auction eats up so much time. Please don't let this feeling end. And then Noah strolls down the aisle and bids on the boat like a big fucking asshole. And Felice thinks it's a joke. And Noah and Donna love shocking Felice with the reveal that actually Noah does have enough money to buy the boat. And then some, because he's one of those hunters. And he takes Donna aside to say he bought the boat because he needed a place to live, and this way he can give her the space he wants, but she already knows she wants to keep seeing him, and they kiss. It is gross. This is the dumbest thing. It's not even a houseboat. Like, just buy a house. And why are you so weird?
Wearing one of those, like, collared but no buttons V-neck shirts that literally everyone wore everywhere in the late 90s that has those, it's like that terrible 70s couch colorway. Like,
yeah.
Since you're going to Bigfoot Felice, which is pretty much what's happening here, wear a suit. Mm-hmm. Don't be Dylan. Because you can't be Dylan, because Dylan was better than you. There, I said it. Dylan's better than no one.
Yeah.
Better than you.
It's really true. All right. Who is our most valuable player? I got to go with Melissa, even though she didn't get the chance to righteously fire David like she should have.
Yeah, I'll go with Melissa with an assist from Walkman Kid. Because, you know, without him.
Least valuable player.
David.
Emma Bennett, the tryhard. Oh, both good choices.
I mean, look, she's a tryhard, but she tries and her bangs are on point. Nothing about David,
you know what? You're right.
Is working. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. User submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
This comes to us from @thecrazedspruce on Twitter, and he wants us to list 5 ways Dead Scott would be shoehorned into the plot if he weren't dead. Maybe offering David a job, since whatever he ended up doing, if he had lived, he would be more successful than David.
Writing a column at the Beat.
Shopping at Khaki Nation, because you know he would wear him some khakis.
You write the obituaries.
Dave,
what was that?
So good. He said he would write the obituaries at the Beat.
Yes, that is correct. Offering Steve and Carly a place to do it. Ordering wine for the Peach Pit
episode. There you go. Ordering wine.
Next time on Again With This, Steve does stand-up, David stands up for LGBTQ youth, I don't know either, and Brandon probably does it standing up with Emma, because that's this square show's idea of an irresistible kink. Don't worry, we're not taking the mid-90s fashions lying down, You can see those in our visual aids, which we'll post for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Dr. Feelbad, Sarity Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Body in Motion Sickness, Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Khaki Nation Manual, David T. Cole, and he is on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.